Welcome to the Gabby Reece Show, where everything is an experiment.
If there was no struggle, if there was no contrast, if there was no resistance, then we wouldn't have the contrast of knowing what it is that we don't want to then be able to know what it is that we do want to then get what we want. And so there has to be, in some way, struggle. What I love to tell people is that your why, you know, you say you want to do something. Do you want to be the absolute freaking best at what it is that you want to do? Yes or no? And if you're saying yes to that, you can't take that lightly. And your why for wanting to do what it is that you want to do has to be greater than any excuse that you could ever have for not doing it. And to me, that's the difference between someone who gets what they want in life versus someone who doesn't get what they want in life. The person who really gets what they wanted it bad enough. You have to start testing things out. You have to be curious and open-minded. If you're someone that's just like, oh, I know this already, or nothing ever works for me, then you're already limiting yourself. And so you have to be open to, how can this work for me? How can I learn something different? Maybe there's a new approach or a new take that I can take to this.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. My guest today is Julie Solomon. She is the host of a podcast, The Influencer Podcast. She now has a book out called Get What You Want. And listen, I'm typically allergic to this idea of a life coach. And when I say that, it's because we're just all so different and our mechanisms and what motivates us and how we organize. But Julie's a coach. And what I really appreciate is that what she has done is very difficult. What she's done is, through her own experience, it's occurred to her that other people maybe have goals and, you know, they want to create businesses or they want to amplify their platform or their brand, but they just don't know how to get from point A to point B. And through her own experience and her own trials, she has put together an organized system to help people. And it's asking those questions and instilling new and different habits that would lead someone to kind of find not only their path or passions, but also how to do that. So maybe you already have an idea, but you don't know how to put it all together. And she is incredibly passionate about it. And you know, for me personally, I tend to put things together by going through it. And then we'll, you know, sort of say, oh, I claim to not really know much, except I know it's important that we try to take care of ourselves. And what I realized, though, about someone like Julie, who is willing to stand there and go, hey, I can coach you, I can help you, I can ask you the questions with confidence, is because, you know, she wants you to be successful. So if you've got that little voice inside your head and maybe you've been thinking about doing something, but you just haven't gotten started, she's the person who's like, I want to see you do it. And she's so tenderhearted. And when you look at her, you go, okay, well, she's figured out something. I mean, she looks together, organized. Her makeup looks beautiful. She has two kids. She's in a relationship. She's created, you know, businesses, and she's getting things done. And simultaneously, her business is built around helping other people, which I think is so valuable. The other thing that's been so important is all of us finding that person or those people that speak to us in the language that we hear. And so I know a lot of people will benefit from hearing from and being inspired by Julie Solomon. So enjoy. So Julie Solomon, thank you for joining me. I have a lot of questions as usual. The thing I want to talk about, and we're going to get into, you know, basically your journey into helping people kind of discover purpose and develop brands and monetize brands and even your own journey, which I think obviously has a lot to do with how you got here. But I think I want to start off with, in this day and age where everybody has a lot of feelings, and you talk a lot about grit. And I thought that maybe you would be the best person to usher me into, because I come from,
you know, the old school where everyone sucked it up and, you know, just deal with it. And there were sort of authority figures, especially coming from sports. And even in business, it's like, it's hard. There's a boss, you know, it's sort of like all of this because, you know, I have other businesses besides sports. So maybe we could start there. And then I'll backtrack and sort of talk about your journey. How do you deal then in bridging, hey, it's hard. Life is hard. Being an entrepreneur is hard. Work is hard. And then managing people's feelings, especially sort of maybe younger entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
How do you bridge these worlds? Because no matter what we say in our culture, business or getting anything done or nature is savage, period.
Yes. This is a great question. And I think one thing that we all have to remember is that it's great to feel our feelings. It's great that we're now in this age that we are open to people doing that and being more in tune with their feelings and being more in align with their feelings. All of that is great. And there's also the reality of contrast and resistance that has to be there in order to succeed and get what we want. If there was no struggle, if there was no contrast, if there was no resistance, then we wouldn't have the contrast of knowing what it is that we don't want to then be able to know what it is that we do want to then get what we want. And so there has to be in some way struggle. Not always suffering. I think suffering is different than struggling, but I do feel that there has to be a struggle. We were just my son's almost 9 years old and he's playing for the first time ever padded football, which is something that as a mom, I've really had to like get to the other side of. But, and he's a little guy, he's 59 pounds. I mean, he barely even was allowed to play, but he's so fast. And my husband and I knew that this struggle of him having to be in those heavy pads and to, you know, at 7 and 8, they're not really hitting with a lot of impact, but still being met with that resistance, that is what is going to get him to be faster and to be more focused and to be more determined than ever before. So you have to be aware of when your feeling of wanting just to kind of stay in the feeling and be happy and floaty in the feeling starts to become complacent to what I think is some just the natural evolution of survival as human beings. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I guess I'd like to take it a little further. So if I have somebody who's 25 or even, you know, in their early 30s and they're sort of taking on and they want to be entrepreneurs, they're going to work with people that have a difference of opinion. They're going to have people that they have to work with and get something from that, I'm going to put it in parentheses, make them feel uncomfortable, you know, like all of that. And I guess when you're sort of coaching or mentoring, or, you know, you have a podcast, The Influencer, you have a book, Get What You Want. You wrote a course in 2016, Pitch It Perfect. Like, you have been communicating with people and giving them tools to get certain things done. And I guess I'm just been so fascinated to watch our world shift and people using different feelings in a work environment that it may not be appropriate. Like it's, right. You know what I mean? Like it's become very blanket. And so I guess what I'm interested in is how you, because you are a bridge, right? Like you're a person who's given these people the tool. You're sort of in your later 30s. So you live in both worlds. How do you get this group or someone who's maybe not comfortable, and you work a lot with women?
Yeah.
So I'm fascinated in, are we talking about kind of compartmentalizing, or, because I say that I have young adult children. So I'm interested in also how to keep reconnecting back to this, to the next group. Because everything's always changing.
Right. I think as a coach and as a mom, which you're doing a lot of coaching as a mom, to me, it's not so much compartmentalizing as it is just boundaries. I don't assume the responsibility for anyone else's feelings, success, or happiness. I just express my own in a way that if you turn into that or tune into that and can be in the vibration of it, then you can start to experience the benefit of your own success and happiness and the benefit of understanding and being aware of your feelings, even if they're feelings that you don't like. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's when we become dependent on being responsible for other people's successes is when it can get hairy. And I've seen that in my own, even in my earlier days of coaching. And, you know, I talk about it like the metaphor as if you're looking at a wall with two ladders on it. And there's one ladder and all of my clients are going up it and I'm at the bottom. And, you know, and I'm pushing them up and I'm pushing them up. And then one of their hands gets tired and they slip and fall. They fall on me. I take the brunt and then I'm back at it and I'm pushing them up, begging and pleading, tweaking and testing. And then after a while of doing that, I look over and I see that the other ladder that was there actually had my name on it. And it wasn't until I got off their ladder and started climbing my own that I was able to really show up and be of service to them in a way that my success as a coach, my love as a coach, my work as a coach is not contingent on if they're successful or happy. It's contingent on if I'm successful and happy by being a conduit and a reflection of that.
Right, leading more from the front. I think the other thing is when it gets hard, especially when you're talking about, you know, taking this more sort of uncharted path. So if people are going to be entrepreneurs or content creators and all these things, this is sort of an unnavigated place for most of us, right? Like you sort of go, okay, you're cutting the trail as you go, regardless of whether it's been done. When you're doing it for yourself, it's usually kind of uncharted. When they hit all the walls that they're going to hit, I guess what I'm looking for is, you know, what is it that you communicate as somebody who understands? Sometimes you have to deal with it. Like sometimes you have to, like, yeah, it's hard. Are you able to have that direct of a communication with the people that you work with?
I am, just because I don't know any other way to be. You know, the way that I was raised by two parents that never went to college, that, you know, they literally had to do whatever was possible to put food on the table. Yeah. So my relentlessness and my determination and my drive and grit, because you use that word, it's, you know, I have no other choice. I literally wake up every day and live out my life and do my work as if my livelihood depended on it, because I don't know any other way to be. And that was what was reflected to me. And I'm actually really grateful that that is what was reflected to me. And I also feel that it's actually kind of doing the, you know, my family and my grandparents and my great grandparents and my lineage a complete disservice by not trying to show up and be the absolute best version of myself that I can be, and to continue to evolve, because they already did all of that. They already, you know, struggled and strived and, you know, had to do all of that hard work. So for me, just to kind of float through life would be a complete slap in the face to everything, to the path that they had paved. And mm-hmm. So what I love to tell people is that your why, you know, you say you want to do something. Do you want to be the absolute freaking best at what it is that you want to do? Yes or no? And if you're saying yes to that, you can't take that lightly. And your why for wanting to do what it is that you want to do has to be greater than any excuse that you could ever have for not doing it. And to me, that's the difference between someone who gets what they want in life versus someone who doesn't get what they want in life. The person who really gets what they wanted it bad enough. And that's just the frame of mind that I come from. It's how I was raised. It's the school of thought that I come from. So, you know, I've had to find that own balance in my life. When I was growing up, we didn't have time to feel our feelings because we had stuff to do. And so I had to find the balance in that of, you know, becoming aware of my feelings and my thoughts and my belief systems and why do they make me think and feel and react the way that I do. It's important. But I don't want to dwell in that. I've got to use that as a tool to persevere and to get to the other side of what it is that I want to get to the other side of.
And I want to go deeper into that. I, you know, for people listening, you grew up, I think I heard you say, you know, that you're literally your grandma lived in a double wide and people were paying the bills and getting it done. And, you know, I grew up not so dissimilarly, but sometimes when you grow up with this, I don't want to say scarcity mentality, but like you said, literally working for your, to get it, to keep the lights on, to keep food on the table. This is a whole different set of rules. Have you, as an adult person with two children and married and all this stuff, and I just asked this out of curiosity, have you been able to offload? Because it is, it's the thing that's so hard for us, is the thing that's great for us, but then becomes maybe unuseful again later, right? Like you're at a place in your life, you don't need certain traits that actually propelled you to where you are. Have you been able to offload this? And if so, how have you done that?
Yeah, it's interesting, Gabby, because I'll spot it in other people first, but they say like, if you spot it, you got it. Like I'll see it in my mom all the time. I'm like, mom, you don't have to like eat every single thing on your plate because you don't want to waste the food, or you don't have to check in with me 15 times a day to ask me if I'm like saving my money. Like, you know, but that just comes from her own scarcity mindset of a way that she used to live. And so there's parts to me that definitely have had to kind of check myself in that. And to me, it's first the awareness of, you know, okay, I'm having this thought, or I'm, you know, what is kind of like, what receiving mode am I in right now? Am I in this kind of scarcity, fear-based place, or am I in this place of curiosity and excitement and joy? And if I am in a fear-based place, okay, noticing that, but can I then accept, and I think this is what is the hardest thing is for people, is the acceptance of what's my part to play in this? You know, what is my part, even if it's just 1%, what is my part to play in having these thoughts that are now getting me these results and these solutions and really essentially this reality that I don't want to have? And it's really hard for people to accept what their part to play is in those. But I think the more that we can become aware of when we're having those moments and start to accept it without, you know, judging ourselves and becoming, you know, this victim mentality or whatever that may be for people, the more that we can then go into a state of action, which is like, okay, this is the reality of the situation. Now, what are you going to do about it?
Right. And you're married, Jonathan, is he very different than you? So the kind of, my husband is different in that way. He didn't grow up with anything, but I think because he spent so much time in nature, his true faith is in a way much naturally more fluid than mine. And he's like, he always says, you know, listen, it's going to be okay. And it is okay. And, you know, do you talk to Jonathan, and is he different than you in that way? And, you know, just because I think we do need little things to help us. We can recognize it, but there's something, we need these little practices to go, oh, I'm going to course correct. I'm not going to default to my old rigid, grind it out way just to get it done. I'm going to maybe try from a different place.
Yeah. You know, I think we tend to kind of balance each other. In some ways, he will be a little bit more scarcity of a mindset. In other ways, I'll be. The interesting thing about Jonathan, first off, he's 15 years older than me. So he has this wisdom and this outlook on life that is just different than mine. He's lived more life than me. And Jonathan is also someone that, you know, he packed up. He comes from a very working class family. He's from Baltimore, Maryland. His dad was a police officer and his mom worked in HR. And his dad was a cop in Baltimore. That's not an easy job. And so there was a lot of struggle and strife there, a lot of mental health stuff happening there. And so when he was 19 years old, he packed up his little pickup truck and drove across the country to LA to make it as a star, to become an actor, which no one from his town had ever done. That in and of itself was just insane to even think that. And then he did, and he did it. And he's been a working actor for over 30 years and has starred in a multitude amount of films and has worked with some of the greatest actors of our time. And that kind of of hopefulness, that kind of believing in a greater possibility, that kind of ability to see creativity and creation at that level is huge. Yeah. He's also traveled the world extensively and has been, you know, surrounded by a lot of different types of cultures and people and ethnicities, which brings a really beautiful perspective on life. So he does have this way of pushing me when I will want to retreat or falter or maybe kind of feel bad about myself. But then on the other end, I think I bring kind of this fresh millennial approach to things as well. I'm way more of like, take me to Vegas and I will freaking roll the dice and gamble this. John's a little bit more traditional and conservative with kind of things like that. He'll kind of think through things a little bit more while I tend to be kind of more of a zest with that spirit of testing things out. But I think that it's the balance of that that you do need. And if you can have that in a partner that can catch that within you, that can really be that mirror. And it's really about just you're constantly seeing yourself in the other person. And I appreciate him for that and having that within him. But there are times, luckily, my goal, and I always say it with him in our family dynamic, is that I never want to get too high with the highs and I never want to get too low with the lows. And so if we can find what that baseline is of peace and serenity for ourselves, then that's what we're working on day in and day out. So yeah, that's how we kind of come into that, I think, together.
Well, and clearly it's like you're both in a way practical dreamers, which is a pretty amazing combination where you have someone's like, I'm totally willing to dream, but within it, I'll put a system in place. And you have a systematic kind of, I think it seems like you framework things like, okay, systematically, otherwise there's no way you can help other people do that. Have you learned anything that has surprised you about marriage that you thought it was one way, but now you're like, oh, in looking at it, I've actually shifted and it's this way. Is there anything shown up for you after 10 years of marriage?
Yeah. I mean, 10 years we've been together. I was married before Jonathan for a very short time. So I had that experience and then the experience with him. I've had children with Jonathan, which I didn't with my first marriage. So that dynamic in and of itself brings in a whole other layer as parents. You know, you would hear, I think before I got married, you would hear people say things like, you know, it's a lot of work. And you know, that's such a general kind of blanket statement. Like, what does that mean? It's a lot of work. And I think that what I guess I thought was the work, which was just like, well, we got to balance our schedules. And I kind of looked at everything being very external and tangible without realizing that the real work comes from, you know, can I really love this person with no conditions? And I think that really starts with me loving myself unconditionally. And really seeing, you know, the ugliest, messiest, worst parts that I may see in himself. It's really just a reflection of like the messiest and worst parts of me that I don't want to face. And so to me, that's the work. Doing the work is that, you know, by wanting to support my husband or support my family or support my marriage, what that means is that I have to help myself and I have to support myself first. And I have to really take care of myself and put myself first in a lot of ways. And that's not selfish. And that took me a very long time to understand. I also loved to fix people once upon a time. And so if I could just fix everybody else, then I didn't have to worry about fixing myself. And that's what I think I kind of thought that marriage was like, oh, well, I'll just go in and I'll just make this person better. And they'll just be so grateful that I came into their lives and made them so much better. And it's like, no, I think that really, for me, the testament of what makes our marriage work is that we give the other people the dignity to be themselves, even if that means I don't like the decisions that you're necessarily making right now. I don't agree with them, but I'm going to give you the dignity to have your own experience because that's the whole point of the human experience.
I think that's very wise and very well said. I had my father was from Trinidad And I have two uncles from Trinidad, and they're very funny. And I had a friend come over, and he was like getting married the next weekend. And this is many years ago. My uncles, you know, in this beautiful lilt of the West Indian accent, were like, oh, yeah. And he goes, just remember, you know, when a man marries a woman, he kind of hopes she'll never change. Like, she'll stay like, you know, kind of curious and fresh and like, oh, you know, and oh, I'm listening to every word. And he goes, and when a woman marries a man, she's thinking of the first thing like that she'll change about him. Like, oh, well, you know, that shirt, that, 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 that. And I think what you said is very, very important because I think especially it feels like females have this internal mothering kind of thing, like to sort of do it. And then you realize like you can't really do it with your partner. It's better if you don't. It's better for the for yourself. It's better for them. It's better for the romantic element of the relationship that you don't have those dynamics. But I think it's so well said that when we can pull back on like, oh, I know how to do that way better for you or what you should do than you. So I really appreciate that. Before we slide over into like just very brass tacks kind of questions about, you know, building a brand and what is a brand and some of those things, for you as somebody who's doing a lot of things, you are a perfect example of what a lot of people experience, which is you're wearing a lot of hats, you're being a mom, and you're supposed to like kind of have your shit together, right? You're helping other people be like, let's get it together. And so, like we said earlier, leading from the front, like you have to, and you're still a person. And so I think your insight, because to look at you, you go, oh, this person has got some, it's dialed. How are you navigating the hats? Like you said it earlier, like, you know, enough healthy kind of selfishness so that you can show up for everybody else. But let's say in the weeks that, you know, it's just upside down. And, you know, that's how life gets, you know, it doesn't go as we always plan it. Where do you go? What do you do for you? Because I would imagine that would be good for all of us to figure out how to get to a place that you go, okay, either I can weather this, like it's cool, I can weather it, or I can also figure out how to get closer to a sense of homeostasis, even if it's crazy out in the world and my kids are crazy and my husband's away shooting or he's nutty or going through his own thing. My clients are, I don't know what's going on. Do you have anything that you have developed to help you with that besides just being very tough?
Yeah. You know, I learned this idea of taking life one day at a time, once upon a time. Sometimes it's 1 hour at a time. So I will remember that in those moments. I think this is when we have to be so keenly present, but in those moments, it's when we're mostly not, because we're so frantic and we're so out here, we're not allowing ourselves to be embodied. So what I do, and this is Julie allowing herself to feel her feelings. I'll be aware of the feelings that I have. If I, you know, and to give you some context, I have a 9-year-old, almost 9-year-old little boy, and then I have a 2-year-old daughter. So we're in it right now with, you know, the diapers and the making sure that we survive mode. And there's times that it's like, I don't want to be a mom. You know, not that I don't want to be a mom, but I'm like, I just don't want a mom right now. And I'll have those moments. And I have so many friends that are moms that have those feelings throughout the day, but they will never say it because they don't want to be shamed or they don't want to start shaming themselves. But I'll allow myself to say, okay, this is the feeling that I'm having. I do not want a mom right now, but I'm not going to shame myself about it. I'm not going to guilt myself about it. But what is this feeling telling me? And a lot of times what it's telling me is that I need to, whatever I'm focused on in the moment, I need to switch gears because it's not bringing me to this state of joy, peace, excitement, curiosity, whatever are the feelings that I think we all need to have to be at our most optimal selves. So if I start feeling those things, I know that I'm doing something wrong. So that's when something like moving my body comes into play, which when I'm usually in that state of being, the last thing that I want to do is move my body. Luckily, I do have a husband who is very physical and he takes care of himself every day. And he's like, even if it's just going for a walk, Julie, you have to move your body. Drinking water, I mean, these simple things, Gabby, but it's what helps. It's walking, getting out in nature, some fresh air, drinking water. If I'm near water, I'll walk towards water, meditating, reading a book, changing the subject. I mean, anything that I can do to get me out of that toxic way of thinking or feeling really, really helps. And I also allow myself to kind of go easy on myself because I know as a mom and as an entrepreneur and as a wife, there are seasons. And so there's this particular type of season that I'm in right now, and then I'm going to be in another season, and then I'm going to be in another season. And I allow myself to just be in the moment of that. And I know that if I'm given tomorrow, like tomorrow's a new day, I also know that like I have a chance to start today over if I want to. If my morning ends up being kind of nutty, then I can be like, you know, I'm going to start today over. What do I need to do to start today over? And to me, it comes from this idea. And I do talk about this in the book. It's that have, do, be versus be, do, have. I think a lot of us live from this place of have, do, be, that, you know, once I have fill in the blank, once I have the money or the house or the family or the job, then I can do everything that I want to do. And then I'll be happy. Then I'll be successful. Then I'll be excited about life. But when we're living from that place, we're always waiting for this haveness. We're always waiting for our externals to change in order to start really embodying our day-to-day life. That has gotten me nowhere when I've done that. I know that the life that we're living right now is not a dress rehearsal. This is it. And so if I really want to get out of life what it is that I say that I want, then I have to come from that place of be, do, have. I have to become the woman who wants that life that I'm saying. I have to become her first in order to do what is necessary in order to have what it is that I want. So I don't wait for some mystical source to bring her to me. I don't wait for that. No, I become her. And so the money, the house, the guy, the kids, the woman, whatever it is for anyone, they don't make you, you make that. And so it's coming from this state of, if I want to be someone who is successful and healthy and lit up and whatever that goal may be for somebody, then I have to start becoming that now. And so it's, you know, when I wake up, what does my morning routine look like? You know, what am I putting in my body? How am I moving my body? What am I consuming? You know, am I making sure to create before I consume something else? Because consumption can be very toxic. So am I creating and getting my thoughts and my feelings flowing before I'm just consuming something else? And really start mapping out who she is. Who is this person that I want to become? And don't wait for the externals to change to start living it.
I really appreciate that, because I think too, a lot of times, like you said, I think it's hard for people sometimes to be honest, even if it's just for a moment of like, you know, this sucks. Or I used to joke, I'm an only child, and I would come home and I'd be like, who are all these people, you know, and it's my family, you know, and I'm like, what are they doing here? You know, and just like, actually just having a good laugh, like with your partner or a girlfriend that knows, like, of course you're not going anywhere. Of course you love your children. Of course you're going to show up. But sometimes it's like everybody F off, and they know that you don't mean it. You just kind of need to honor it so you can get on with it. And I think that sometimes we're so afraid to just be like, you know, take ownership of that and be like, great, now back to, you know, our original programming with maybe an improved perspective, you know?
This podcast is brought to you by Ritual. I personally have been taking their multivitamin since, well, right when COVID started. I needed one. And I learned all about Ritual, and I've been taking it ever since. And they know, listen, that women really do need to be a part of the scientific research. And they conducted a university-led human clinical trial for their Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin to assess its efficacy. And the results? It increased vitamin D levels by 43%. We all know the importance of vitamin D. And omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks. So they are really very big, not only on the science, but making sure that the ingredients are traceable, clean, and in a bioavailable form, which means your body knows what to do with the actual nutrients once it gets it. And the way they did it is so simple. They took 9 key nutrients in 2 delayed release capsules per day that optimize your body's absorption. And it's really easy because it's gentle on an empty stomach. If you're rushing around, you can't be like, oh, I have to get my vitamins, but I need to eat first. Even has a nice little minty essence right at the end after you take it. So you don't have those weird, I call them vitamin burps. I'm not loving it. And Ritual Multivitamins are vegan, non-GMO, Project Verified, gluten and major allergen free, certified B Corp. And like I said earlier, everything is traceable. So no more funny business, nothing shady. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. You can get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/Gabby. That's ritual, ritual.com/Gabby. You can start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 plus to your subscription today at ritual.com/Gabby for 25% off.
So you moved to California, and based on, you know, sort of saying, okay, I'm going to, forgive me if it's vlog, or I think it was vlog or blog, you were like, hey, I'm not great at that, but you did find a kind of rhythm for yourself about how to monetize and use content. And that sort of has led you to do all kinds of things. Like I mentioned earlier, you have a podcast, The Influencer, and your book, Get What You Want. Let's talk about brand, because when I was coming up, for example, as an athlete, when I was with Nike, you know, none of the athletes ever said, oh, it's good for the brand or the brand or the brand and all this stuff. But because I came from fashion and then I went over to sport, I did understand sort of some importance about certain things, whether it was like, hey, they're only going to see you once in a while on the TV or in a magazine. So make sure who's shooting you is making you look good, and try not to be a total buffoon when you do interviews, try to represent yourself, but honestly, right? Like, don't make it so polished that it's a disconnect. But nowadays, everyone's a brand. And I'm so fascinated because, again, I've been at this for more than 30 years. So I'm like, oh, they've been here for 5 minutes and they're talking about their brand. I'm so interested in this. So when you have somebody come to you and you go, okay, you want to create content, you want to do this, in your mind, what is a brand? Is it something that you're telling people like, hey, you want to create a map on what are you representing? What are you selling? How do you start there?
Yeah. Well, I take it to really, there's a brand like a Starbucks or a Nike, and then there's what someone else would call a personal brand. And that's really where personal branding is this very conscious and intentional effort to influence or persuade the public perception of an individual by positioning them as an authority or an expert in their industry with their credibility. And so, for example, let's take Nike. Who's the CEO of Nike? I don't know. Does it matter? Like, I'm still buying the shoes, right? Like, who the person that created Nike, it's never going to be contingent on the sell through of the image, the mission, the brand, the products that are Nike. Same thing with Starbucks. You take Oprah, for example. Oprah nowadays is a personal brand. She's also a brand, but that is someone who, when we think of Oprah, we identify it with a core person, and it is our trust, our love, our connectivity to that human being that is Oprah that makes me want to buy what Oprah is selling. So that is really, I think, the difference between traditional brands and personal brands. With the age of social media, and more specifically in the age of influencer marketing that has arisen over the last 8 to 10 years, we have seen this rise in personal branding. My husband, who's an actor, you know, said it. He's just like, there's no stars anymore. Anyone can be a star. You can create a TikTok tomorrow and now you're a star. And it's because people can literally create Instagrams and TikToks and YouTube channels and become personal brands overnight. Now, to me personally, I feel that there is a difference between someone who is just creating content for the sake of creating content and maybe has this image or this perception out in the public forum versus a personal brand who actually has a deeper calling, a deeper meaning, and a purpose, and they want to leave a legacy and they want to create a deeper impact. They want to be in service of others. And how are they using their persona and their influence and the perception of that to do so? I also believe that, you know, personal brands that really have the longevity to succeed are the ones that do have credibility and expertise to actually back up what it is that they're saying and that they're talking about and that they're creating. And that's really where my personal brand kind of came out of. I was a publicist by trade for many years before I got into what we now call influencer marketing. And that's when I realized that my years as a publicist had helped me to really perfect this art of pitching and this art of marketing and this art of really working with companies and monetizing my brand by landing brand deals. So I became somewhat of a natural for it because I was doing it for years for clients. And that's really how I started the business that I had today. I started doing it for myself. And then other women started seeing that I was doing it for myself. And then they wanted to learn more and so on and so forth. But I think that the more, if there's anyone that's listening that is curious about branding or wants to create a personal brand, it's first about getting really clear on starting where you are with exactly what you have and getting really clear on what is something that someone would need from me that I could be a solution provider for that would actually create impact in their lives, no matter what that is, and getting really clear on that first. And then getting curious about, okay, now how can I show up to be that solution provider? And to me, that's really the core. That's where you figure out what your offer is. And that's really the core essence of a personal brand. I think that anyone can get on social media and talk in front of a camera, but the ones that are really going to be here 9 months from now, a year from now, 3 years from now, are the ones that get really clear on what it is that they're offering to the world and why does that actually matter.
So it makes me think of two things. So you talk about pitching. What goes into a good pitch? Because I think, you know, for a lot of people, this is a tricky proposition, and it's, you know, it's an element of, you know, presentation and public speaking and things like that. So what goes into that? I mean, you're very confident and you have an inner toughness that is sort of dialed in element to your personality. But let's say someone's listening and they think, oh my, I wouldn't even know how to pitch.
Well, first it's a mindset piece. A lot of times people get scared to pitch themselves because they think that it's sleazy, that it's slimy, that it's salesy. You know, we get the idea, the vision of the used car salesman, and they don't want to come across as that. But what they're actually doing is keeping themselves small because they're not allowing themselves to crack open. They're not advocating for themselves. They're not asking for what they want, and they're not going after it. And so what I teach clients and students is that, first off, we're always selling something, whether you realize it or not. And so we might as well get really good at it. And a good way to get good at it and to stop seeing it as being so sleazy is realizing that pitching is a service, not a sale. And so the more that you can come from this place of service and genuinely being of service, the more that you can create impact, the more confident that you're going to feel because you're creating impact, and the happier you're going to be, and the more that you're going to want to pitch. And so it's getting over that idea first that selling is bad or selling is wrong or who am I to do that or it's gross. It's a service. And the other thing that you can realize for people that are like, well, I've never pitched before, or I don't know how to do that, or I'm not as confident as other people. The truth is that you're pitching all the time, whether you realize it or not. You know, in business, a large part of the way that we communicate is dedicated to persuading others, whether it's on social media or it's in boardrooms or it's in emails or it's on your website. Networking and building community and getting people on board with your ideas and perspectives isn't any different. You know, you can pitch an idea or suggest a course of action, and you're sharing your values in hopes of persuading someone to come on board with those shared values. And in our personal lives, it's happening all the time. Every time we suggest a restaurant or what our kids should eat or a book to read or telling a friend about a podcast that we've enjoyed, you know, we're not only pitching our perspective, but we're also sharing what we feel is important. And so it's really about thinking of pitching in a way that serves. And a great way to think about this is if you think about someone in your life who you've maybe happily given money to or given your time to because they pitched you something that resonated with you and it touched your heart and it made you feel understood and it made you feel seen. And that's really the beauty that is the art form of pitching and how I look at it. It's relationship based. And when it's done well, it's subtle, like a recommendation. And that the more that you can come from that place of seeing it as a service, the more that I think you can get comfortable and confident with starting to use it in your life in a way that helps you get what you want.
I wonder, like, if someone goes, huh, my brand, you know, maybe somebody has something, do you think it's always obvious to people what their brand actually is? Or is there maybe a vetting? How would you get through that?
Yeah. A lot of times people don't. And this is where human beings, we love to overcomplicate things and make things a lot harder than they need to be. And so we're always looking outside of ourselves for like, what's my brand? What's my offer? What's this thing that I could give to the world? And what I've noticed through my years of coaching thousands of women is that 9 times out of 10, our offer, we're always serving someone who used to be a former version of ourselves. And so if you can think of it in that way of, you know, even my business, I created my services and my coaching because it was something that I needed at one time that didn't exist. And so I created it. And so when you think about it in that way, it makes it less overwhelming, it makes it less daunting, and it makes it less complicated. So that's why I love to tell people that you have to start exactly where you are with what you have. Like, who you are today is more than enough. You don't have to be or do anything else, just today with what you have. You have to start getting really clear on what is something that you have that is valuable, that somebody else would see as valuable and happily pay you for it. What is that? What is your core piece of value that you have? And for some people, that may take a little bit longer because a lot of people have a lot of self-worthiness issues. They don't think that they have anything that's valuable. They don't think that they have anything that they can bring to the table. So those types of clients, we have to dig a little bit deeper and kind of work a little bit more on the mindset. But we all have something that is of value. And that it all comes from our background, our experiences, our education, you know, the family dynamics that we were raised in. We all have unique perspectives on how we view and see the world. And our perspective could be the very thing that that person out there needs. And so it's our job to be able to effectively discover that, document it, articulate it. And then the way that I teach, and you touched on this earlier, is putting it into a process. So how can you take what it is that you offer, getting clear on that, what do you offer? Who are you offering it to? How much does that cost? And then now let's put it in a process that someone can easily consume. And a lot of times it's a lot like baking a cake. If I want to bake a really good tasty cake, I could either wing it and hopefully I've got the right amount of sugar and hopefully I've got the right amount of eggs and hopefully I've got the right amount of flour. Or I could go and find a really good recipe that's already been tested, tried and true, great reviews. The person that made the recipe knocked it out of the park. And I could take that. And then maybe I sprinkle in a little bit of chocolate or cinnamon or give it my own little dash of something that makes it tasty to me. But the core foundation of that recipe remains the same. And so the more that you can document or take a process that's already been replicate a process that's already been there and create it in your own unique way, the faster that you'll get to what it is that you want as well. I think that that's what trips people up. Everyone thinks they're reinventing the wheel, and that could not be farther from the truth.
Yeah, don't reinvent the wheel. I can tell you. I mean, like, no. You know, and the other thing is, it's important for people listening. I know you work a lot with women, but if there's, you know, I have a large male audience, is this has also been a development for you. You've gone from A to B and B to C. And yes, then you started a podcast and then you've written a book that took 3 years to write. And so I think it's also important for people to realize that if you keep moving forward, the new doors show up, and the lessons that you're learning make you more equipped to deal with what's coming. You're not expected to know everything at the beginning, and you're not going to. And I think it's just very important for people to realize that that's for everybody. They're, whoever you want to look at, they've all gone through the school of doing it. And so, and there's no way around it. So you might as well get going and see what happens. I think it's really important. What do you see as sort of the common do's and don'ts of the people that you work with?
Yeah, I think the common do's and don'ts is do get started. You know, that's a big piece. I see a lot of people that I work with, it's like they make up and tell themselves that they have to wait for the clarity in order to get the confidence. Mm. But it's actually the confidence that creates the clarity, not the other way around. And so you have to start testing things out. You have to be curious and open-minded. If you're someone that's just like, oh, I know this already, or nothing ever works for me, then you're already limiting yourself. And so you have to be open to, how can this work for me? How can I learn something different? Maybe there's a new approach or a new take that I can take to this. So curiosity is a major do. You have to be a critical thinker and to think critically. You know, people that hear something and freak out, like, you know, I don't want to be that person, and it's going to be really hard for me to work with that person. So you have to make sure that you can come into a space that, even if you're scared, even if you are freaked out, it's okay to be freaked out, but can you be conscious enough and aware enough to say, okay, this freaks me the F out, but I'm here and I'm open and I'm willing to listen and to learn. That to me is the best kind of client that I can have. I remember when I was little, like I was terrible at sports, Gabby. I was the worst. I was like the girl out in the outfield sitting there playing in the grass. I was horrible at soccer. I was good at tumbling and cheerleading, but everything else, not so good. But when I think back and look at that, and think about just achievement and focus and drive, I always wanted to try so hard to be the best that I could be. And so it wasn't about being perfect. It wasn't about being the star. It just, can I be the best version of me? And so I think that that's another do versus don't. If you get so bottled up in the perfection of things and in having to look the part and having to, you know, dot your I's and cross your T's, it's going to be a lot harder to really find the crux of the magic that's inside you.
And what about when they experience, because we all experience it on some level, you know, a sort of a form of imposter syndrome, you know, it's like, and sometimes you have to almost put yourself in the situation for, and then everything kind of catches up. Do you have any sort of advice for people when they are experiencing it? Like, oh, I might be in over my head, or I hope they don't find out, or, you know.
Yeah, to me, I feel like, imposter syndrome is a form of control. To me, when people are in, myself included, when we're in that imposter syndrome, it allows us to say, you know, who am I to do this? Or I'm a fraud, or, you know, whatever we make up and tell ourselves. And so I'm going to control my ability to do this or to not do this. I'm going to control the resistance. I'm going to control how I'm showing up because I feel this way. And so it is a way to try to really control the outcome, which is actually keeping you from the outcome that you desire. And so the more that you can see that as a form of control, and the more that you could release that and lean more into the trust, I think the better off that you are, at least for me. I mean, the more that I can, and it sounds so cliche, but the reason why everybody says it is because it's true. It's trust the process, trust that you are supported, trust that it's always working out. Even when it's not working out, it is always working out. This is meant for you. And where you are right now is exactly where you are meant to be, because that is going to, you're going to get so many downloads and information and thoughts and ideas, and you're going to receive so much that is going to allow you to get to the next step. And so I think that's with the imposter syndrome. It's also, I think, one of the most common traits, because it's fear as well, that people can have. So in some ways too, I think that feeling like an imposter. I call it like special snowflake syndrome. It makes people feel very unique. But if you can, and we're all unique, yes, but at the same time, we're just like everybody else. And so the moment that you can kind of see that of like, oh, well, maybe I'm wanting to feel like just this unique and helpless and hopeless person that, you know, can't seem to figure it out or can't seem to get to the other side of it. How is that really serving where it is that you want to go? So it's that balance of, am I having special snowflake syndrome? Yeah. Can I just accept that I am unique, but I don't have to be terminally unique? And what about me is kind of like everyone else? Because then I think that kind of also downplays it a little bit. It's not that crazy or scary right. if it's a very universal feeling to have.
Right. Like you're not faking the whole thing. You just might have feel parts that you just are feel a little, you know, kind of over your head. And that's just all part of it. When you, because you're big on habit building. So if you have somebody who comes to you, maybe they're not inherently disciplined, or they haven't put systems in place before. They weren't the president of the student body. They didn't run for election. Who knows? Like, what are the practices people get along the way? What's the encouragement you give them for effective habit building?
Yeah. You know, what I love to do is I do a lot of vision mapping with clients, and I love to write things out, and I get really, really tactile. Like I'm all about the tactics. So if it's habit building, it's first going back to that be, do, have, like, who do you need to be to become, like, if you want to be the person that is one of the most sought after keynote speakers in the world, then who do you have to be? Like, what does that person, what does that keynote speaker do when they wake up in the morning? And if you don't know, well, then let's just start guessing. Let's just play. I'm sure that they probably have some kind of morning routine, because most successful people do. They probably meditate or pray or journal or do something. They probably exercise, because most successful people that I know exercise. And again, this is not rocket science. Like, you can read any book, listen to any podcast, like any successful person that I know that is at peak performance working at a high level, they move their body. They have some sort of spiritual practice connection to their source. They're eating as well as they can for themselves. They are probably going to bed a little bit earlier, waking up a little bit earlier. They're being very mindful. If they've got children and things like that, that they need to be somewhat responsible for during the day, then how are they getting in that me time? So what does that look like? And so I make my clients get super tangible of like, what time does that person that you want to become go to bed? Yeah. Write it down. Are you going to bed at that time? And so I map that out. And to me, that in and of itself is a documentation. And when you can start to see that, you can start to become aware of how far removed or how close are you to actually embodying this person? Because you can say that you want something, but actually showing up for it is a completely different thing. And I even did this, you know, this week with myself. I told my husband, I got really lost in my book marketing. And I was like, John, I'm going to the gym with you. I went to the gym this morning. I was like, I have to go move my body. Who am I to think that I can do this without having that physicality that I need and to really take care of my physical form? It's impossible. And so it's also a process. Like, there's never going to be that day where you're like, well, okay, here she is. There is that day, but that day you're dead. Yeah. So, you know, here she is and life's over. So it's also remembering to that, really preparing the documentation of what that is for you and then checking in with that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can be daily for people, weekly for people. Am I actually showing up to what it is that I say that I want to do and who I want to become?
So I have you just for a few more minutes. I want to ask, when you have somebody who's like, they're doing a 9-to-5 right now, I'm sure you get a ton of clients that come to you and they go, okay, I really want to make this switch, but they're reluctant or afraid. Is there an approach that you have to that? You know, because it's also based staying in reality, but, you know, how do we make that transition?
Yep. So this is where I love to say, like, honor the season that you're in first. So let's get really clear on what season are you in? Like, you're working a 9-to-5. Okay, now what does your life look like? Because we want to set it up to where it's actually realistic for you to attain, not these big ethereal things that just are not realistic to you at all because of the circumstances of your life at the moment. So you have a 9-to-5. What does that look like? What are your responsibilities before you get in there at 9? What are your responsibilities after? And then really mapping out, okay, let's say if you need, how many hours of sleep do you need at night? For some people, it's 8. For some people, it's 6. Okay, so for you to be at your optimal performance, what is that? Let's pad that in. And I use a lot of simple math. You've got 24 hours in a day. X amount of hours are going to sleep. X amount of hours are going to your work. We're left with X amount of hours. What else do you have to do? Are you a mom? What are your responsibilities there? What kind of self-care are you implementing? So we put that there. And then we're left with these extra hours. Now, how are we using these extra hours? The other thing that I encourage people to do when they have a 9-to-5 is that once you are aware of the hours that you have left in the day, how are you spending them? The fastest way to cut back your hours of overwhelm, and we've mentioned it numerous times so far, is to find a trusted expert who has a method or process that you can follow and invest in that. You are going to A, get to where you want to be 10 times faster, and B, cut your workload in half just by doing that. It's when people feel like they have to do it all themselves and they try to hunt down things on the internet or aimlessly look for the answers that they start wasting exorbitant amounts of time. And then they feel like, how am I ever going to do this? I don't have enough time in the day. You do have enough time in the day. It's just, are you using the time to actually get you closer to where it is that you want to go?
Now I'm going to bounce for 1 second to something. Actually, there's a woman, she has a product, she's the Korean vegan, and she was an attorney, and then slowly kind of, she's a great example of somebody who kind of did that, and she had a real grown-up job, right? So I just want to remind people, but I also want to say, you're talking about time, and this is personal, but you said, hey, I'm not going to drink anymore. And that is a time suck too. Was that like a conscious, hey, this isn't serving the greater her that I'm trying to be? And just kind of stop that. Because I think that people don't realize that stuff is sneaky.
It is so sneaky. Because for me, it was the, you know, the glass and a half of wine, which would then lead to food that I wouldn't normally eat, which would then lead to a really crappy sleep at night, which would then lead to feeling sluggish the next day and foggy the next day. And then you just start down this perpetual loop. And so it is, it's about being really mindful with, you know, oh, I'm spending an hour a night drinking wine and watching Netflix. Okay, that's interesting. And maybe you do need a break. You know, like maybe there's times that you do just need to like chill out and veg out. Okay, so let's be aware of that. But is it becoming habitual? Like there's a difference between needing a moment and then a habitual practice of something. And I didn't want drinking to become this habitual practice because it's not giving me the clarity that I want. It's not giving me the foresight that I want. It's not giving me the sleep that I want. It's, you know, it's not making me feel good in my clothes. I mean, all of the things.
Do you find like,
and for me, that can be.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, do you find that your friends are, it frustrates other people when you make changes that maybe it makes them have to look at what they're doing? Did you get a lot of like, oh, that's so boring? And I think I just want to remind people that sometimes when we make changes, not everyone's going to be like, good job. And that's okay. But just stay alert that you don't let that stuff creep in.
Yes. And you could be surprised. It may give other people permission to do the same.
Yes.
What was really interesting for me, Gabby, is like when I would go to dinner and wouldn't order the wine or the margarita and would instead order the mocktail, It was like 3 other women at the table were like, oh, well, you know, I've been kind of curious about doing this. I may order a mocktail too. Like we don't realize how much, you know, sugar and process, you know, bar food and beer and wine and all of that stuff. It's like, it's this social glue that people think keeps them together. Yeah. And when you change the script changes. And it's been really interesting to see that by ordering that, kind of what the rest of the table may do.
So besides the Influencer Podcast and your book is out, which anyone who knows anything, doing a book is not easy. So I really commend you on doing that with a young child in COVID. Unbelievable. Get what you want. Tell me all of the other places that people can find you.
Yes. So my website is juliesolomon, SOLOMON.net. And that's where you can go just to learn more about me, my history, my work, all of the stuff there. I do have the Influencer Podcast, which I've been airing an episode on every Wednesday since 2017. So there is a mountain of content to dive into there. Lots of strategies, lots of mindset, lots of, development support there. And then obviously the new book, which you can get wherever books are sold, Get What You Want. And then I tend to spend most of my social media time on Instagram, and you can find me at Jules, J-U-L-S, Solomon.
Are you pressured into TikTok yet? I'm sure you are. Good luck with that.
Absolutely not. I refuse to do it.
I know we have to go. I want to end on one question, which is, what do you consider a win? Because I think sometimes people, they get it backwards. And I think someone like you who has watched people achieve things, help them and done it yourself, I think you have a different perspective on what a win really is.
I do now. For a long time, my wins were very money driven. Like, once I make million, then I'll win. Once I have this kind of house, once we can get the beach house, it was very contingent on these kind of accolades and these things. And I want to say, if people are into that kind of stuff, like, more power to you. I don't think that there's anything wrong with material at all. As long as, like, your side of the street is clean and you know your intention, there is nothing wrong with wanting a beach house or a Range Rover, or to just buy, some jeans at TJ Maxx on the full sale rack instead of the half price rack. Like, whatever it is to you is great. To me now, winning is, I think, honoring the work and really, really realizing that the joy is in the work. That's the win. I know that I'm winning when I find joy in the work. And sometimes there can be ease in that, and sometimes there can be struggle in that, but finding the joy in that and letting that be enough.
Thank you, Julie Solomon. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. If you want to learn more, there is a ton of valuable information on my website. Head to the link in the show notes and click GabbyReese.com to find a full breakdown with helpful links to studies, research, books, products, and more. Stay tuned for a bonus episode coming this Thursday where I go deeper on one of the topics that really resonated with me. If you have any questions for my guests or even myself, please send them to @GabbyReese on Instagram. If you feel inspired, please hit the follow button, leave a rating, and a comment. It not only helps me, it really helps the show grow and reach new listeners.